She's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Death, a funny business with Becky and Tash at 5 p.m.
every single Tuesday.
My headphones are a little bit low. I can't hear. There we go. I can hear myself. Ooh, what a good day.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. The Pope is dead.
I know. I think I'm not going to lie, though. Dying on Easter, little bit cunty. Just a little bit cool. He was just like, nah, I'm going to hold on. Two bouts of pneumonia. He was like, fuck that. I'm holding on right to the day of resurrection. I'm going to rise up, you know. I'm going to scare the living crap out of all these people. Like, God bless. Do you know what I mean?
No.
No. No, I just think it's just such a, move.
It is a move.
Good for him, you know.
If
you're
going to
die, die in style. Don't, you know, die on the day that Jesus roseth, you know.
It's too much.
God bless him, though. It's quite shocking.
And now we're going to sit down. This is going to be a new Pope.
Well, can I just say as well, I think it's actually quite sad, like all seriousness, because he's actually quite a progressive figure. He's quite a progressive Pope. Four popes, like, let's be real. But he's said nice things about the gays, and he's said
we like that,
we do like that. And he's been talking about ending the war in Gaza, and like, he's been calling for ceasefires and all kinds of things. That's just like, way, like, he's just anti-violence and like all of this. And I think, seeing as it's like a very, it's a democratic process choosing a pope, they like, they pick,
they have
one
to vote. Yeah, they have to vote until they don't, they lock themselves in a room or something.
Yeah, and then, until they decide. Yeah. Did you watch that movie?
No, I didn't, but I got told about it.
It was a good film. But yeah, so I think, I mean, God, and who knows where the world is going. But if what's happening in my head?
I don't know where the world is going. We're talking about, like, we're on a show called Death, a Funny Business. Sorry. And oh, then yeah. I brought the Pope, yeah. And then I don't know where you're going.
Well, look, my point is, I'm just a bit worried we're going to get a very right-wing Pope, and all of a sudden it'll be a bit like stressful, and he'll be like, don't let the gays marry, and, you know, like, let's go really, really serious.
We have to put our trust in the other
cardinals.
Members.
Welcome to Death, a Funny Business. We talk about death, and my mum's dead, and so is her dad.
Woo!
And today we have a really fun show, as per usual.
Yeah, we always
course.
Have a fun show. We say that every single week.
We always say that. But truthfully, we actually have some really snazzy guests. We
two
have
guests.
Two guests. Amber Jeffrey, who is the... what is she?
Well, she's a creator and host.
But she's
of the Grief,
host of the Grief
yeah,
Gang.
The
yeah.
Grief Gang podcast, which I'm sure if yeah. you listen to our show, then you probably
listen
have
to the Grief Gang. And this is why I was like, I don't know how to name her, because she's like kind of like a girl boss CEO situation. So
very
I was like,
cool.
The CEO
she creates
of the Grief Gang.
Community for people who are grieving.
Yeah, she's got this beautiful community online. She's also, they have
meetups.
They have meetups and they have grief circles. So we're going to have a nice chat with her. And then we've also got Judy Lipson, who's the author of Celebration of Sisters, It's Never Too Late to Grieve, and which is a book she's written all about the loss of her two sisters, which is going to be very, I think,
sad.
Quite moving. But like, I'm interested to talk to her about how she struggled through her grief for
being
so long.
Like this, and yeah, exactly, being like kind of the last sibling left, and not
totally.
Not grieving straight away, like
totally,
holding that in
totally, because that'll do it to you.
We know that.
I mean, you should see my jaw like a rock. I hold that tension all in my teeth. My poor dentist is like, you need a night guard. Because I'm just like,
just so stressed.
You know?
We've got to release, haven't we?
I had a big cry. I remembered, actually, while we were sitting here.
When did you cry?
I cried. What day is it today?
Tuesday.
Sunday evening.
Big Sunday evening. Was it because of the Pope?
No. I was in bed. I wish it was because of the Pope. Yeah, it was because of the Pope. Actually, my Catholic upbringing really rubbed off on me in the end. For those who've listened for a long time, I know. Jewish girl in a Catholic school. How did I do that? Dun, 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 dun. That's a story for another day. Actually, that's a story for right now, because it involves my dead mother. I had to leave my state school Because I got bullied to shit. The girls used to take me by one person each arm and lock me in a drama cupboard and steal my Kindle because they were mean.
Did they have Kindles at that age?
I had a Kindle because I was a weirdo. I had little glasses and I used to read. So they were like, oh, she's so... And little did they know, I was reading like heavy, heavy smut.
Yeah,
I was like, please don't read my porn, please.
My fairy porn.
But they used to put it on high shelves. Anyway, I moved to this other school because none of the schools in our town would take me because I wasn't a Christian. So my dad, no, my best friend had to write, ask this other school to take me. And we basically got in on the merit that my mum was dead. They were like, please take her. We know she's not Catholic, but her mum is dead and she's died. You know, she's struggling. Somebody help her. So then I went to that school. So on that note,
sorry, I'm really loving you today. You've had a coffee.
So intense.
I've had four coffees, but feeling quite zen.
I don't drink caffeine, so I just like I had a. I left the house at 7:30 this morning, and then I finished at 2:00, and I've been like doing the sales assistant thing, and then now I'm here, and I need a pick me up. So I was like, I'm gonna have a really small oat shaken iced espresso,
whatever that
brown
is.
Shaken iced and now I like I'm slurring my words.
You were crying on Sunday.
Oh yeah, I just had a big cry. I just missed my mum. I just wanted to tell everyone because you know, it's one of those things that we're supposed to share on this podcast. It's the place to do it.
It is.
At the end of the day, I was in bed and I was like, I'm a bit like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Just like, oh, it's Sunday scaries. I don't want to work tomorrow. And then I just let it all out.
And how do you feel?
I had a little cry. I did feel better in the morning. Mm. I had pretty good night's sleep after that.
You have the best night's sleep. Oh, it's like as a kid when you like would be really angry and you'd like go out to your room, storm up there, slam the door, like, pack your bags, ready to leave.
I'm gonna cry.
I'm gonna fucking leave this house and then I'm gonna move out.
Yeah.
And then you just fall asleep.
And you just fall asleep and you're like, wow, I feel so good.
It's so good. I had a cry yesterday.
Yeah, tell me about your cry. Apparently, kind of sensual in the bathtub.
I cried in the bath.
Tell us about crying in the bathtub. Rebecca.
I was going to go somewhere with that and then realise that was really weird.
That was inappropriate.
I was in the bath.
Okay.
And I cried.
About what?
I don't know. Well, it was actually because I was hungry. I'm not joking.
When is your period due?
I didn't get my period.
Oh, sorry. That's just me.
I was
my
really
is
hungry.
Due for those
I was
who
like,
monitor it.
I think what happened was that I went out for lunch, went to my boyfriend's like family friend's house.
Sorry, I can't. I used to have a boyfriend. It just makes me giggle.
Disgusting. And it was really lovely. There's two parts of this. This is twofold. So we went there and I don't want to give too much away, but basically we found out that there were three different...
You won't give too much away.
There's a table.
Yeah.
We're sitting around the table.
Right.
It's my boyfriend.
Yeah.
And his mum's best friend and two kids.
Okay.
So you've got a siblings. And then you've got this lodger that was living there. And he's this bloke our age. We found out that all of our dads are dead.
Oh, wow. Like, what?
Well, I know that my boyfriend knew that.
Yeah.
He was dead.
But then you were like, wow, I'm sitting around this table with...
Yeah. So that was just a bit weird because everyone was like every male like figure in everyone's life was dead.
God.
And everyone died quite young. And it was just, I don't know what it was,
somber?
But it really fucked with my head. And so I went home and just felt a bit like, is this it? Like, is this what's going to happen? Because
what do you mean?
We talked
just being
so
in a family
much,
with
yeah, we talked so much about okay. death, but I never really noticed a situation where everyone around me has gone through the same thing. And I think in terms of like at the dinner table, it was just a really weird environment for that to be the case. And it really, really upset me. And I thought, oh my God, we've all been through so much pain. And I know how much pain everyone's been through. And it made me think how unfair life is. And I just thought, this is really upsetting. And then I just thought, that's it. Like, who's going to die next? And then I just thought,
Becky.
What's the point of being here?
Becky.
And it just all spiraled. And then I needed to just have a cry and I felt better. But
no,
it just really
important.
Triggered me for some reason.
I understand that. I would like to try and reframe your thought process there, if you don't mind me suggesting something.
Please do.
I would like to remind you of a day that we hung out all together with a load of people who'd lost their parents.
Mm.
And what a lovely thing that was in the end.
So true.
The day we Mr. James's memorial, me, you, we won't name everyone because that's a bit weird, but the other kids who'd had lost parents ended up, and our parents all ended up at dinner. We all realized, like, somehow everyone else kind of like straggled off, and it was just the lot who'd lost parents, like either a dad or a mum. Like, I think most of them had lost, actually all of you guys had lost dads.
Yeah,
so like, you know, I won't say everyone's name, but, and then me, lost mum, but like, we had such a cathartic experience in that, on that dinner. We had a great curry.
We did.
It was lovely.
That was really
lovely. I wonder if I would suggest to you that actually maybe it's not about all the pain, but maybe about you guys being together and understanding that shared experience. And maybe you'll have times like that curry.
That's really true. And also, I think maybe it was being present with that. I was really aware of how important it is to be present in moments and like how...
Not to say that your feelings are valid.
No.
I want to make that clear.
But I think what's interesting is that I hadn't quite processed why I was crying. I thought it was because I was hungry, but I think it was actually because I was really upset about the fact that there was so much death around the table.
Yeah.
And there were so many missing people.
That's really heavy.
And I didn't know these people at all. I didn't know their dads. I mean, I'd only just met the family. Yeah. But it was the fact that it was so common. I think that's what really terrified me, because it made me think, who's next? What's going to happen? But then I did have to reframe that and think, actually, we just need to be enjoying the present and where we are at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is going to happen. That is, we are going to deal with more loss.
It happened.
But it just made me really fucking sad.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's still really freaking sad.
Yeah, I think I also think there's
like a level of like you meeting your boyfriend's family and it being like quite a joyful occasion and like kind of, I mean, look, not to scare Joe, but like, oh, sorry, I'm not supposed to say his name. It's too late now.
For life!
It doesn't matter. Not to scare him, but like, I mean, when you think about like forever and you think about a long, like longevity with a partner and then you find out that their family it's not something you can escape into.
Mm.
I think that's quite interesting.
We've talked about that before, haven't we, escaping into people's families?
Well, it's like, I was just going to say, like, I literally, the other reason I cried is because, like, I was, like, thinking about my ex-boyfriend's mum. I really don't miss my ex-boyfriend. Love you so much, sorry. But I do miss his mother. Like, and I had a big cry about that because it felt like losing a parent again, like, of having that figure. And, like, maybe it's a thing for you where it's like, oh, shit, I can't fake it here. Like, I can't. Sorry to, like, not, don't mean to, like, psychoanalyze you here, but, like, is it, like, a thing of, like, kind of, oh shit, I can't hide in here, but it's not all, you know, sunshine rainbows.
There's no real like
your
safe place. Like my safe place would be a family of four or like a whole family
who are just like,
what does that even mean?
We're like, we don't have any problems.
Yeah.
I'll just add you into our little bundle of joy and we don't have any sadness. And then they're like, no, Becky, welcome to the clan.
Yeah.
You are not the only one with a problem.
Yeah.
Like, you're not the only one who's had this.
Really true.
Sometimes I say good things.
No, that's so true. Maybe that's what it is.
I think it's like an escapism thing. Like, because I would think I would feel a similar way. I think I would be like, okay, like, we all get each other, but also, like, it's just
a shit situation.
Yeah.
And we're all aware that it's a shit situation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's almost like having to, I guess it's just having to kind of accepting that, isn't it? And then also knowing, but then also thinking like, oh, so am I going to die next? Or is my boyfriend going to die next? Or like, it makes me think that there's always going to be a hole in my life forever. And there's all that hole is going to come at me and eat me. And it's like a really scary nightmare. Hey,
I know. I mean, we were just talking about how, my dad always answers when he has bad news to tell me. He always answers it quite dramatically, and he starts by like, "Are you sitting down?" And I always think someone's died.
Fuck's sake.
Do you know what I mean? Every time anything like the smallest thing could have happened,
that's
like
so
he can't
bad.
Come to like dinner on the weekend, and he's like, "I need you to tell. I need to tell you something. Something, you know? Are you all right? Are you alone? You know?" And I'm like, what's happened? Who's died?
Who's he's died?
Like,
he's
like, "I can't come to dinner tomorrow." And I'm like, "Oh God!" And then I've like had heart palpitations for like, you know, whatever. But babe, it's a never-ending journey, and I think
tell me
that
about
you.
It. I think we should ask Amber about it.
I think we should. She's a grief mentor, so
I might bring this up with her.
Well, let's bring it up.
Okay, let's do it.
Should we go to a break?
Let's go to a break, and then we're back with Amber Jeffrey, from the host of the Grief Gang podcast.
Slay.
See you in a bit.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, Amber Jeffrey. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. I'm a little bit excited. I feel a little bit starstruck.
Oh, don't say that.
No.
Look at my screen. Tell me, Becky, Natasha.
I'm Tash.
I'm Becky. Hello. Hello, hello. Firstly, we're loving your glasses. And two, we feel like we have a grief celebrity on the show.
Yeah, we do. I kind of like... I am...
I feel like, oh, I peel my skin off.
No, that is the mood. Peel off your skin. No, also, Amber, you're wearing the most fabulous glasses I've ever seen. I think Becky just said that.
I did.
I didn't hear that.
For anyone who can't see them, they're bright red / pink.
They're so good.
They're very cool. Very cool.
I feel like they hide the bags under my eyes, so that always helps.
Yeah.
Hides the grief. thanks so much for wanting to talk to us. We're really excited to chat to you all things grief. Do you kind of want to talk us through what the Grief Gang podcast is about, the reason you set it up, and then let's start with that for anyone who hasn't heard about what you do.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much for having me on here. I love a bit of radio and it looks so fun. I just love listening to the ads as well. I'm like a sucker for an ad too, so I really enjoy that as well. Hello everyone. Yeah, I'm Amber Jeffrey and I am the creator and founder of an entity, I suppose, called the Grief Gang. And it no longer just consists of a podcast, but it originated as a podcast. And the very short, and I won't bore everyone with the long-winded story, is that I came to grief and how we all got introduced to grief. We all have an origin story, a villain story, I suppose. Back in 2016, when my mum died of a sudden heart attack, and I was 19 and she was 51. And what that inspired me to do after three very difficult years, as I'm sure many of your listeners and you two both personally will know, of just trying to ride that wave of grief. And after 3 years, I kind of looked around and I thought, oh, I need to do something about this grief. It's kind of nipping at my heels like a little Jack Russell. And it was like, we need to talk. And I was like, okay, grief. And I went down the traditional route of therapy and counselling. And at that time, for me, it just didn't work. And so I thought, there's surely got to be something else for people who perhaps don't gel with traditional therapies. And I just went from one extreme to the other and said, sod it, I'm going to start a podcast and just talk about it with no expectation for it to be anything, just to really waffle. I love to chat. I could talk, you know, the back legs of a donkey. I didn't mind if no one listened. I just knew in my core I needed to get some things off my chest.
For sure.
And in doing that, so did a lot of other people, and they really resonated with my waffles and my sharings, and kind of the rest is history. It has grown into something that I could never have dreamed of, and it has its, you know, multi-layers and nuances to that, but it is by far the best thing I ever did for me personally and for my grief as well.
It's an amazing community that you've built. I mean, we've obviously been fans and, and have been kind of following your journey, but obviously we're really sorry to hear about what you've gone through. We're always really, really sorry to hear about anyone who's lost anybody. Can you please just tell us a bit about your mum and her name and a little bit about her? We think it's really important just to share, to get people to talk about their loved one.
Totally. Thank you. It's such a lovely question and it's one I love all the time. And likewise as well, I think it's really important whenever we're having the conversation about grief is to talk about the actual people we're grieving for. Sure. So my mum's name is, and I use very much in the present tense because she is still very active in my life, definitely, even if it's been 9 years. And so her name is Sue Valentine. She had the gorgeous
name. That is a great name.
It's amazing.
But she didn't bloody give it to me. Ugh. So I just got lumbered with Jeffrey. So yeah, Sue Valentine. Obviously, Valentine's Day was huge in our household. And my mum, she was so many things. She was mad. She was mental. She really, really was. And she was a mother who lived and breathed by her children, and not in a, I say, borderline suffocating way, but she cared. Like, she really cared. And I know that sounds kind of like, yeah, duh, bog standard. That's what a mother and a parent should be. But, you know, especially in my work now, as the years have progressed, and I've met hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and I've met people who perhaps don't have that experience with their mum or a parent or a loved one, and you know, have had to perhaps question their love for their parent and their parent had for them. And I feel so fortunate that I never had that. I never had to question if my mum loved me, if she was in my corner. Mm. She was a real cheerleader, and she was a parent who firmly believed and instilled in her children that if you want to be anything, you can do it. Like, you can be anything you want to be. It takes a bit of grit and determination, but if you want to be an astronaut, you can be an astronaut. And so I think only really in her absence over the past 9 years have I actually really began to truly get to know my mum in much deeper ways than I did when she was here. And like I said, I was 19 when she died. And so I suppose the identity of my mum that I knew for that short amount of time was through the lens of mum. And throughout the years, I've been able to get to know my mum for Sue and understand her as a woman, and kind of as I'm growing and developing more into womanhood, being able to understand and really appreciate some of the most amazing qualities about her and be like, yeah, I had a solid mum there, a solid, solid mum.
That's so lovely. That is so lovely. And I think, like, talking about, like, kind of getting to know a person even after they're gone, I think is such an interesting idea. Like, I've never really thought about that.
I was thinking about exactly the same thing. I was thinking, I'm really interested to know how you got to know your mum.
Yeah.
Like, have you reached out to new, like, her friends and, like, other family members? Because, I mean, I've seen these books that you can buy where it's, like, you get your, like, someone to, like, fill out all the information about themselves so that you've always kind of got, secrets in a little book. Yeah. And I wish that I'd done that. And I guess I always wish that I'd asked my dad those questions.
Yeah.
I hadn't. But yeah, how did you kind of get to know your mum as a Sue Valentine?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think you can kind of through, like, the storytelling, like you're saying, those books. And I remember, seeing those. They kind of were the rave on TikTok, like, at Christmas last year. I was like, get this for your mum and your dad. And I was like, it's too late for me. I was like, it's nice for you to fill them out. But yeah, but I suppose for me, in what I mean by that, of like getting to know my mum, of that, there are some like tangible things, like, say, letters. Mm-hmm. And actually only quite recently, I rediscovered my dad. My parents were separated by the time my mum died. But my dad had kept for many, many years these massive wad of letters that they wrote to each other from when they were pen pals back in the late 80s, early 90s. So my mum lived by the seaside in Norfolk, and my dad was down south near London. So they were pen pals for a while. And I've been reading these letters, and she's a similar age, a little bit younger to where I am now. She's like 24, 25, and getting to know her through these pages. And, you know, she's sharing things about kind of even her own mental well-being, and as she was falling pregnant with my brother, and just all these kind of little windows into my mum outside of the title of mum, of that, oh my gosh, yeah, my mum was just once upon a time a 25-year-old woman who has perhaps now found herself pregnant, or is dealing with, you know, the typical woes of work. Like, she's writing in this, like, oh, I can't be asked for work tomorrow. And I'm like, oh my God, I used to be like that all the time as well. And just all these small little pockets. But I'd say, aside from that as well, and I don't know if anyone listening, if they're like, well, I don't have these letters, I don't have these journals, all these tangible things to actually get to know our loved ones through the pages or whatever it might be, is that I think I've got to know my mum just by default of me growing up too. And I think being able to, as I navigate through different life's hardships, life's joys, and I can almost just think, what, you know, through the knowledge and the experience that I had with my mum, of how perhaps if she might have faced something like that, how she might have gotten through it. And I think, being privy to all of the hardships that she went through before, and life's joys too, I feel I'm able to understand my mum's choices or behaviours and way she was as I have gotten older, as I can be like, oh yeah, actually I would probably react like that too, or I would make that decision as well. And if, you know, that it can run the line of, you know, of course, deep sadness of thinking, gosh, what I would give to be having the actual conversations with my mum. Approach my 30s and look down the barrel of, you know, potentially starting a family, and just, you know, all looking down the future of my life. But I feel really affirmed in kind of that direct line that I have with my mum. And when I say that, I don't explicitly mean spiritually, of that.
Yeah.
I continue a relationship with my mum. That's why I use the present term, is that we are very still much in communication in so many more ways than one.
That is so awesome. Like, yeah. Genuinely, like, what a lovely way to kind of deal with it in such a positive light that's still kind of like stares in the face of the fact that she is gone, but you can still have a relationship with her. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah, I think is a very heavy, heavy word, isn't it?
I was also wondering, like, obviously with the community that you've created online and with the podcast, like, I had a little look at your website earlier and it says that you do, like, grief mentoring and group work. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that and how that kind of came about and how that's been for you cathartically with, alongside your relationship with your mum.
Yeah, totally. Thank you for asking about it. It's, yeah, in the last 18 months, so since 2023, I've started doing the group mentoring and the group circles. And that kind of came about. So in 2023, I'd been doing Grief Gang then for about 4 years. And as I said right in the beginning, Grief Gang, there was no plan for it. To be honest, there still isn't. Do what we need to do. And there was no desire or real plan to be like, I'm going to make this my full-time gig. And by the time I'd got to September of 2023, and it was kind of actually really off the back of another loss in my life. So when I started Grief Gang, I of course had the privilege of making so many friends along the way.
Yeah.
Who both, you know, as well doing active work too, to change the narrative and move the need on how we talk and perceive grief. And I met my friend Poppy Chancellor, who had her own kind of online platform too called The Grief Case, and we became fast friends and thick as thieves, and we did a lot of work together in grief. It's much like you two together. Literally, yeah, we were a duo of all duos.
Duos are great, we love it.
Yeah, exactly. It's always nice to do it together. Yeah. And Poppy sadly fell ill in the spring of 2023 and with acute myeloid leukemia. And then she sadly passed away.
Oh my God, Amber.
No.
And yeah, it just, of course, you know, I found someone in my grief for my mum who, you know, was truly understood. She lost her dad as well in the same year of 2016. It is unbearably cruel of that, yeah. You know, to find someone who you can relate to in grief and then lose them as well. But as well, I think with the loss of my mum and starting Grief Gang and then the loss of Poppy, in between that time, I was really, again, looking down the barrel of like,
absolutely.
Oh, wow, life is fragile. Like, yeah. This is really fragile. And I had been umming and ahhing with, you know, I've done 4.5 years at this point of building solid community work. Like, I've been on the ground with people, hearing directly from them what it is like to live with grief from all different experiences, not just parental, sibling, partner, child, like on the ground, listening to people, whether it's through the podcast or through workshops. And I thought, the podcast, of course, it's here for everlasting and that will be, you know, the catalogue forever. But I thought, you know, I want to take everything that I have learned and that I have seen and witnessed in the power of community and actually bring it to people, like, directly. And that was where I said, I want to start doing group work. I knew the power. Community saved my life. It completely saved my life back in 2019. And I thought, if I can some way mutilate that and bring that to people in some short form, bring them together to help them, well, really essentially find maybe their Poppy, to help them find their community, then I'm happy. And so that was where the group circles and the group mentoring started in 2023. And it's been a wild journey. And I can't believe that I get to do this, something that I love every single day, and hopefully leave a lasting impact for people and help them along their way in their grief.
I think it means, I mean, it's what you're doing, I think, means so much. Like, I remember the need to connect with someone, the need to find someone who understands what I'm going through. And I think to be able to have that community and have somewhere to turn to is so important. So I think what you're doing is just so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, what is one thing you wish people understood better about grief? Just to kind of, I don't know, I think you've obviously heard it all. Like, what do you kind of want to tell people if you could shout something from the rooftops?
Oh my gosh, there's so much. It's like this question I always find, so I'm like, how long have we got? But I would say the one thing that I always think is the biggest misconception, both perhaps for the grieving person and for people who aren't, who are maybe supporting someone, is there is no timeline on this. There is no timeline. And I think particularly for the grieving person, that is really vital to know that. Just today, I had a call with someone who is joining a group circle, and they said, you know, I'm a year into it and I feel like I should be done. And I was just like, that is heart shattering, because I just think, I'm like, I'm 9 years into this and I'm done with it. Grief is a lifelong contract. And I know that sounds absolutely petrifying to some people, depending on where you are in your grief. If you are like day one and you're listening to this and I'm saying this is with you forever, you're going to be like, excuse my get fucked.
Like, it might turn this podcast off.
Yeah, they're going to be like, what? Is that petrifying? Because, you know, it's like, you know, the typical five stages of grief, if you're privy to that and you know about that. That the reason why people hold on to that is because that's a step by step. If I follow these steps, it's a clear timeline, I'll be done with this grief. And though the five stages of grief was not meant for grieving people, it was meant for people who were dying. And it's all these little things. We want to pathologize grief and to have a clear blueprint, and the actual reality of saying, oh, actually, sorry, this is with you for life. It's like, oh, was not expecting that. But when I say that, it doesn't mean like a life sentence, like a death sentence. Grief being with you for life can be one of the most greatest teachers with you for the rest of your life. I'm glad my grief is with me for the rest of my life, because what it means it's the love as well for my mum and
absolutely
for my
friend. That's very true.
You know, that trope of grief is love with nowhere to go. And it's like, I don't believe grief is love with nowhere to go. Grief is love with everywhere to go. Like, I've got a whole lot of love for my mum and for my friend Poppy that I want to put out into the world and to keep that going. And so I would just say, that grief is with you for life, and to kind of eradicate these timelines that whether society or media has put onto us, and these kind of timelines we might claim for ourselves that we might permit onto other people if we are supporting them. To realize that, like, where did we ever get that from? Where did we ever get that grief would be done within a year or in a couple of years? Like, when we actually question these belief systems, we go, oh, actually, I don't know where I picked that up along the way.
Yeah, we've definitely realized that recently, I think. How like, this is not like a there's so much more to it. And I think, and the other thing, we've got to wrap up now, but I think the other thing I think is really important as well is, like, you know, when someone dies, how much that love, like, I think you value that love so much more as well. And that's something I definitely want to do, is start kind of talking more in the present about my dad and not kind of live in the past. And I think that's something that I've learned from you today. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing everything. We're going to go home and lots to think about now.
Grief gang.
Grief gang. And so thank you so much. We're joining you guys after the break with Judy Lipson.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello and welcome back to Death, a Funny Business with myself, Becky Briggs, and
Natasha Spencer-Levy, that's me.
We are joined with Judy Lipson, the author of the book Celebration of Sisters, It Is Never Too Late to Grieve, about the loss of her siblings. Hi, Judy, can you hear us?
Yes, we can. Thank you so much for
joining us. Where are you in the world?
Thank you. I'm in Massachusetts.
Oh, what's Massachusetts?
USA.
Like right now? What's the time?
It is 12:38 p.m.
Oh.
You're not too early. That's good. Thank you so much for joining us. We haven't read your book, but we really would love to kind of know about your book and also about your sisters. I mean, could you please kind of tell us about who they were and then what kind of like made you want to write the book?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to meet you both. And thank you for reaching out. So I lost my sister Jane in 1981 at age 22 in an automobile accident. And 9 years later, my sister Margie at age 35 after a 20-year battle with anorexia and bulimia. And surviving siblings are often kind of taken a back seat and take care of everybody else. So for 30 years, I kind of suppressed the grief. So I had written articles and people had encouraged me to write about and share my sister. So I finally decided it was time to kind of share my story with others, to kind of help others so that nobody be alone in their grief. So the book is Celebration of Sisters because that's the name of a fundraiser that I founded to honor my sisters, an ice skating fundraiser to benefit Mass General Hospital in Boston, because as girls, we all skated. So writing the memoir was a kind of writing as an introvert is kind of your way of kind of expressing your thoughts.
For sure.
So it was a great way for me to kind of, it was challenging to relive the actual deaths, but it was also for me to kind of revive the memories. And part of the story is that I had lost the memories. So I didn't do any research. I didn't speak to anybody. That's part of the story. So it's just me as kind of a tribute to my sisters. And it's a story of love, loss, and moving forward even after years. And that there's really no recipe for grief, and that it is really never too late to grieve.
And on the topic of memory, what were your sisters like? Were they playful? Did you guys get on?
I'm the middle, so your typical middle child. There was a 5-year gap from top to bottom. Jane, my younger sister, was the baby, and of course, spoiled. And, you know, both my sisters were very outgrowing. I was the introvert and the shy one. Jane was... she tried to be cool, but she really wasn't. And, you know, I was kind of like the nerd, and she sort of was embarrassed to me. But when we were younger, I sort of took care of her and loved sharing a room with her. But she was very lively and very spunky. Margie was my idol. You know, she was everything I aspired that I wasn't. You know, a cheerleader, popular, I had boyfriends. And she also talked too much, but it was very outgoing.
That sounds really lovely. And I think also the thing that's really intrigued us is how much, you know, you've talked about that you suppressed your grief for so long. What do you think kept you from confronting it sooner? And like, what finally led you to perhaps realize that you hadn't grieved or like get to that point?
Well, there are a couple of factors. I think taking care of my family, and I think as siblings, we also do that. The second thing was I didn't know what grief was. I was 25 and 33, and I think I probably was experiencing grief, going back to work in a fog, and was grieving and probably didn't know what it was and just kind of barreled through it. And the third thing that I probably didn't realize was the trauma of having a sister with a mental illness all layered into that. And so when my father had a neurological illness and was dying, and his death that I knew was going to be huge, and I was actually really living through the death of him, that kind of sparked me to kind of realize that I needed to face and really deal with all the losses in my life.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about grieving a sibling who's also gone through a really traumatic experience herself. Would you like to speak a bit more about that and how that was, what that was like for you? Because you obviously had to grieve the illness as well. Would that be correct?
Well, I think Margie was sick for 20 years, and mental illness at that time was really taboo. Don't forget, this was the 70s.
For sure.
And I think that it's grieving the person that you want them to be, that they're no longer. And of course, there were pieces of her that were always there. She could read me like nobody else could, even as sick as she was. And so I think, you know, having a family member with mental illness impacts the entire family. And I don't think that, you know, and then it was always kept a secret. It wasn't talked about. And I think all of that layered into it.
And how did you, obviously, Becky mentioned that you've mentioned that it took you 30 years to even process that. Was there physical signs of kind of suppression of grief, or did you just realize, you know, with your dad and everything, that you were holding all this in?
Yeah, I just really kind of powered through. And I mean, there were signs there throughout the years, and I had gone through therapy on and off, you know, but I think it just, I just was so busy. I didn't have time to think, you know, as a single mother raising two kids, taking, you know, wanting to be the daughter for three from my parents. So I just kind of powered through.
I think that's a really interesting point in terms of having to become you know, the parent and having to become, when you're a child, especially, you know, you're having then to become the adult and become something that you were not trained to do, especially during that time. For those who've lost a sibling, what would you kind of want them to know? Like, what really helped you? I mean, I understand that this book perhaps was a really cathartic release and also, you know, really helpful in your grieving process. But for someone who has lost someone, what kind of would be your message and your advice to break down those barriers and say, look, you know, just this is how I should grieve, this is how you should grieve?
Well, I think everybody's timeline is different and everybody's journey is different, but there weren't the resources that there are today. And I think as long as you have somebody else, that you don't do it alone. So now, you know, through COVID and other things, there's so many groups online or in person. And if a group isn't for you, is finding someone that's in the same position as you are, who has lost a sibling, that you can have, like, a lack of a better word, a grief buddy, I think is so helpful.
Totally.
And giving yourself compassion and not comparing your grief to anybody else's. You know, why am I not crying? They're crying. Why do I want to read everything? They don't want to read everything, because everybody approaches it differently, and you have to find what works for you, and showing, you know, compassion for yourself.
Absolutely.
And what does, I'm just thinking, in the UK, grief is still quite a taboo, hence why we kind of set up this radio show and we wanted to talk about it. What about in the US? Like, do people talk about it? Is it something that people joke about? We're often quite sarcastic about grief as well. What's it like where you are?
In the U.S., it has become, you know, how, like, mental illness wasn't talked about. Now grief is talked about. Unfortunately, we've had so many tragedies that it has become on the forefront. So that it is, unfortunately, so prevalent in our society that it's become more talked about, and there are more resources for everybody. Where it was, you know, when I was going through it, it wasn't a conversation it sounds like you're dealing with in the UK, but like mental illness was when my, you know, sisters and whatever. So there are more organizations, more resources, more groups, so many more resources.
And just to end on a positive note, I wonder if you could tell us a bit about the fundraiser with the ice skating. How does that work? Do you get a lot of people together and everybody skates?
Yes. No, it's a skating show. So I am in my 50s, the first time we skated off and on my whole life, recreational, and we always skated. As girls, we skated. So it was one of the happiest memories I have with my sisters.
That
we did, all three of us together. So I wanted to do something to honor them. And, you know, our family has always been very philanthropic. So it just seemed the natural fit to do an ice skating fundraiser. So it's a skating show that people come and watch. And what grew is 10 skaters to 92 skaters, and we raised over $80,000 for the hospital.
That's amazing. My goodness.
It was pretty astounding. So it's been on pause for a few years, and I hope to bring it back next year. I'm going to be 70, and I'm still skating.
You're still skating?
I love that.
Yes.
That is so awesome. I wish I could ice skate.
I can't ice skate.
We used to have where we lived, there used to be, do you remember the ice skating?
Over Christmas.
Yeah, over Christmas. I was always falling on my bum all the time. It's just on the floor.
Don't
all
invite
the time.
Tasha. Well, good luck with your fundraiser, and thank you so much for joining us. And we've got 5 minutes to chat, Tash.
Yeah, we do. But thank you
so much for having me. It was a pleasure to meet both of you.
Thank you. And you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
What a sweet angel.
Very, very sweet.
That's lovely.
If you could have a fundraiser, what would you do?
Oh, we'd have like a little music festival, wouldn't we?
Let's be real. We would be
me,
on stage.
You singing songs to crowds of people.
I think I'd do a karaoke night.
Karaoke night would be fun.
That would be really, really fun.
That would be so fun.
What have we learned today?
I think you should say what you've learned. I think Amber, you felt quite strongly about Amber today.
Yeah, I did actually. I think I realised that I live quite a lot in the past, and that my dad is very much someone who was, and it's all about memories and remember this time and all of that, rather than thinking about him now, or like, but then that makes sense because he's not fucking here. But I quite like the idea of her saying is rather than was.
Yeah, I like that too.
And I've never said that before.
No, me neither.
Every time I say was, it kind of hurts a bit. Yeah. You know, oh, he was like this.
Well, what's interesting, I'm pretty sure that when we talked about our parents on social media, when we did it on our Instagram, and we wrote those things about mum and dad, like, we, not that we're related, sorry, it sounds like I'm saying, like, our parents.
I like that. We're sisters.
I think you wrote in that tense. I think my dad's name is Mark.
Did I?
I think you did. I'm going to find it.
I might have done. But when I'm having conversations with people, but it's also a way for me to say, oh, my dad was, in a conversation with someone, so that they know that he's dead. Do you know what I mean? It's like, rather than saying, oh, my dad's dead, it's like, oh, yeah, no, so my mum is this, and my dad was this. And for me, that's just an easier way to bring up my dad into conversation without making such a big thing about it.
Well, but why then don't we talk am about I your dad
but then am I
right now?
Talk about my dad right now.
Let's do it. What was your dad like? What was Mark like? I can tell you what Mark was like.
Go on.
Mark was the life of the party. No, he wasn't. He didn't sound like that. But that's just how I feel about Mark. Like,
yeah, he was the life of the party.
He was the cool dad. He was like the cool dad. The cool dad.
That let me have parties. And
he totally like, oh my God, the parties that we used to have at, what was your house called? Checkers.
Yeah.
Do you want to know a funny story about Checkers? I was headed to your house for some kind of party or like day or whatever. I was having a play date with you, and I had to tell my dad where we were going, and you'd just told me on the phone or whatever. You said, I live at Checkers. And I told my dad, and my dad was like, I don't know where that is. And I was like, this is where it is. And he was like, how am I supposed to know? I can't just put the word Checkers into that. I was like, I don't know where it is. So trying to find your fucking house, like panicking.
Is that the story, Dash?
Yeah, that's it.
So interesting.
My dad being cross about me not having your postcode. But that was a fun time to be alive. To
it
be
was
honest.
Fun. And he was though. A friend more than anything, I think. I had that. I was really lucky to be able to have a relationship that was a friendship and as well as having like a dad. So I felt like I could be really open and honest with him. And a bit like Amber said, I felt really.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I found it. You did write his name is Mark. Good job, babe. See, subconsciously you knew what was going on. I interrupted you. Carry on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I interrupted your train of thought. I'm so sorry. You were saying
she did it. She did it.
I'm sorry, guys. Amber was saying to you.
Oh, she was saying how she felt so loved by her mum, and that that's something that, you know, she will always have and she'll always remember. I think that's something that I feel really like
resonates with you.
Really resonates with me is that I know that I felt my dad really did love
your
me,
dad, and
I
freaking loved his kids.
Feel it, and I think, sure. And then hearing his friends talk about me and my brother and stuff, it's like I never have to doubt that, and I think that gives me some kind of solace. And I have some solace 100%. In that, definitely,
100%. Like I have no idea if my mum would find me so annoying.
Oh, she would find you annoying. She would find you annoying. But
I don't
would,
even
but,
know how parents. I don't know she, what mums do.
But you're supposed to find your kids really fucking annoying. That's the whole point.
Is that true?
Yeah, and your mum was probably annoying as well.
Yeah, like, she probably was annoying. So you know what? I sometimes do wonder. I'm like, would I have been a really bratty person if I'd had a mum? I mean, I'm bratty as it is, but like really bratty. I'd probably have like some kind of body dysmorphia as well.
What if your mum?
Do you know what I mean? If my mum was alive, I'd probably be like, ugh, my thighs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, well, not after those nudes I saw earlier.
Oh, stop it.
I'm joking.
Stop. I had a very tasteful photo shoot. Thank you very much.
It was an art. It was a very artsy
photo shoot. It was artistic. No, it was amazing. I'd like to leave now. Becky, it's nearly 55. We have to wrap up, and I can't cope with that last statement. No,
can I just say, that actually, because the way your face was in that, you were such a model. You looked like your mother. In those Thank photos, you. I think. That's what I was trying to say.
I'd like to preface this. It was
artistic. It was an artistic. Art shoot.
It was not porn.
No. That she saves
not that,
that
that's
for
bad. Look, at the end of the day,
smutty books.
Sex work is work and porn is important. That was not porn. It was art.
Your mum's dead. My dad's dead.
Have
See you
a
next
nice day.
Week. Bye.
Bye. Foo Bar Radio.